What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday. My main man, Josh, Jake, over in the corner, running all the electronics. We're missing Mike today. Our prayers are going out to Mike and his entire team. One of our team members is in having some medical issues. And so Mike is going to be missing. It's his daughter. She's one of our lead designers at the Vodacy Design. So thoughts and prayers going out to them. We're going to miss them today, but we are going to still dive in for Whiskey Wednesday. Talk about all of those hot topics in the news, all the things that are happening in the real world that affects our short-term rental investing journey. And as a reminder, if you guys have questions, we always start with questions. We don't have any. I don't see any questions today, right? No questions last week. So if you have questions, send them into support@vodacy.com. We'll get the questions answered on next week's or any upcoming week's Whiskey Wednesday recording. And so today we're going to talk about, we always start off with a shout out. We're going to give a shout out to Matt and Ari Morris. Their property launched in Sunset Palms on 30A. We post these properties in the show notes so you guys can check them out. We always say success leaves clues, but a big shout out to the launch and the design going out in 30A. I know that everybody's going to be excited about that as we roll into beach season. So we're right on the front end of beach season, and this looks like a very fun property to stay in. So Matt and Ari, good job on that property. We're going to talk about AI photos today. We're going to talk about hosts and guests and how the economy is getting boosted by over $93 million. We'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about more money, more problems in the short-term rental world. We're also going to talk about Fed's Jerome Powell's kind of swan song, his last meeting coming up, and what we expect to see interest rate wise, and all of the kind of the predictions, our crystal ball when it comes to real estate and everything else, interest rates. And so let's dive in. Josh, you've got a couple topics with let's start with the host and guest boosting the economy and or AI photos. Which one do you want to start with? Do you want to start with AI photos?
We'll go right to the AI, man. That was
let's talk a little bit about AI.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we're seeing more and more, you know, I would say owners or hosts starting to incorporate AI into their photos. In general, there are certain guidelines in Airbnb's TOS, for example, that they prohibit certain usage of it. And I think that in general, you peel back all the layers. What you're really seeing is vendors and or hosts trying to take shortcuts. Right. Yeah. And that doesn't work in the long term. You know, I'm not a fan when we do photos as well. We do our own staging. It's real. You know what I mean? We're going to edit some colors. We're going to, maybe clear sky corrections here and there. Whatever the small things are, but it's for adding things that don't exist. I don't mean like adding a barrel sauna when it's not there. I mean, it's like, hey, we're going to add, I have this great fire pit and I'm going to put these 7 make-believe people around this fire pit. I'm going to promote that, right? In the clear lines of TOS, you know, based on Airbnb, that's an event that never happened, right? And you can't say that experience is something that's there. We can do those and we say, hey, you use them on your website. You can use them on social media or your advertising, but don't use it on the OTAs. And the OTAs may not have a certain thing now to where they're going to take, but, you know, we're seeing to where that's, as more and more people start doing that, we're getting to a certain, you know, precipice to where Airbnb or Vrbo is going to start restricting them or compressing the listing exposure because you're showing things that aren't real, right? Yeah. And the consumer doesn't want to see that. If you ask your guest, hey, would you rather see this photo with a real breakfast set up on the bed? Or would you rather see an AI version of it? And which one do you feel more comfortable with? Right. And the consumer is going to tell you the real one. Right. And we saw that with all the ads on the Super Bowl this last year that went that AI direction, and the consumer, the public response was atrocious. You know what I mean? And everyone pulled back spending on that. So I think in general, if you're going to do the work, do it right. You know what I mean?
I couldn't agree more. This has been a topic that we've been discussing within our Vodacy group in our coaching calls. And my opinion on this has been fairly strong right now, because what I think we're seeing is everybody used to Photoshop in the sunsets, right? And that became kind of like the normal thing. It's like, well, fix your sky. We're going to put these really pretty skies, right? And so if you could see a sunset from your house, great, fine. Like, I get that you have sometimes have, you know, sunsets, but people even started sunsetting, you know, houses looking east, right? And so right. It's like, show me a sunrise, not the sunset, right? Yeah. There's no possibility of a sunset looking east. And so that didn't really become a massive problem. What's really happening though now is we start leaning into lifestyle photography. You know, you guys at 5STR guest book, you guys are, you know, you're one of our preferred vendors within our Vodacy family. You've done a lot of these photo shoots. They're multiple day photo shoots. They're expensive photo shoots. You're setting a lot of scenes. What we're trying to do is really articulate what it would be like to be at that property, right? And so we spend a lot of time there and we spend a lot of money there. Well, because those are so expensive, and as AI's gotten better and better and better and more realistic and you know, really good at making and creating these amazing scenes, and now all of a sudden we're putting people in them and they're looking amazing, right? These properties are becoming like the you know, the marketing assets that we're investing a lot of money into. Now we can do it faster. We can do it cheaper, and somebody can do an AI photo shoot. You know, just give me a real estate photo shoot and you give it to somebody that's really good with AI. They can make that thing look, you know, like it's the party's happening all the time. There's people going on, there's scenes that are set, and they can do it for a fraction of what you can do sending a crew out for 3 or 4 days, right? And actually waiting for the sunset and actually setting the scenes at different times of days and all that stuff. And what's happening is there's two things that I think are a major, major problem. The first is the Airbnb Vrbo, the more issues they start to have. And, you know, this last week, just in the last week alone, I've talked to 3 different people completely unrelated to Vodacy, just people who listen to the podcast, who know us in our, in, you know, our personal groups that they know what we do, said, I went to Airbnb, I stayed at Airbnb, and it was not even the same property, right? It was a problem. Like, and they called Airbnb and they said, hey, these are AI photos. And I didn't catch it, but this is the right property. Like, and Airbnb is like, oh, you know, it's the same property, but it's definitely set up different. Definitely looks a lot better. And they're all AI generated. The more and more of those customer service issues that Airbnb and Vrbo start to have, the more they are going to crack down on this. And so your first, you know, order of business is to think, if I am using a lot of AI in my photography, one, am I setting the you know, am I really portraying what I actually have to offer? And most of the time when you're heavy into AI, it's because what you have to offer doesn't look as good in real life, right? And so we say, okay, listen, I'm going to doctor this up and I'm going to use it in the marketing side of it. And I'm going to get these consumers to book my property. And then they show up and they're like, man, I was taken, right? This is a scam. I mean, this doesn't even look like the right property. Airbnb Vrbo. You know how hard it is to have an AI scraper figure out what photos are AI generated? Not that hard, right? Yeah. So they're going to get really, really good at scraping those photos and saying, one, your best case scenario is they take it down. They say, hey, listen, Josh, you can't do that, right? That's your best case scenario because you know it was a problem. You know they had a problem with it. What happens when they start suppressing your exposure and they start shadow banning your listing and the algorithm starts to read those AI photos and those AI generated photos, and they start to say, oh man, Josh, you know, you're putting these AI photos in there. We're going to leave your listing up, and to you, it looks normal, but you're on the last page. You're not getting shown to the consumer, and we're not showing you to our consumer. We have the right to shadow ban you because we'll decide what we're going to show and what we're not going to show. Right. And so that's a really scary proposition. And so a lot of people who have leaned into this, you might have spent $2,000 or $3,000 on your AI photo shoot still, and it could be massively hurting you in the very near future. Yep. Now go ahead.
I mean, you can see like the risk is, you know, we're in this space a good bit, and we've had, you know, even my own, you know, we're outside of STRs as well, right? So my bigger brand, you know, we work with cruise lines, we work with, you know, hotel brands, and I'll go ahead and tell you, these $1 billion brands, guess what they don't do for their commercials and their shoots? They don't do AI, right? And because they know it doesn't sell, right? Yeah. And so you're a small property owner and you're saying you know better than all these other main hospitality brands that exist in this space, outside of the space in general. But if you look at the TOS, and again, I'm a big nerd, man. I read the fine print, right? And like, you can't use AI or digital technology to edit flaws. This is from their own language. To edit flaws, hide damage, add amenities or attributes that are not part of the listing or otherwise misrepresent the listing, right? Yeah. Another one from the content policy is that Airbnb's content policy explicitly includes photographic audio video. I'm reading this photographic audio video or other content, including content generated or using AI. So it's not, you're not allowed to do it. You're already not allowed. Right. And to your point, AI recognizes AI. You're not going to outsmart the computer with the computer. Right. It's going to catch it. And so if you've just paid however much money and you know, the photographer or vendor or whoever it is, like, hey, you know, we'll stage your property for $500 for AI. And you're getting a basic real estate photo shoot with AI staging. Right. That works in the Zillow space. Right. And even the wide lenses that distort on the edges and the oven is 3 feet long. You know what I mean? Right. And it shows you a foot and a half, whatever that is, right? You see that in real estate, that doesn't work on Airbnb, right? And if you go pay for that, and I'm not saying today, I'm not saying tomorrow, but when it happens, those vendors are going to get a lot of calls from a lot of angry clients who are like, hey, I can't use my photos anymore. What do I do? Right. Yeah. And it's because you did the easy button.
Exactly. It doesn't work. And this is where I think the bigger issue is. Let's say, you know, the rules say we can't do it, not to do it. Let's like stop doing it. Right. But let's just say, I like this and I want to do it. Like I just had a call with one of our photographers. They go there they're doing like setting scenes and doing this, and then they're AI enhancing it with some people in there and they look really good. Like they look like really good photos. However, I still know it's AI. Right. And so here's where I think the bigger issue is. It's the consumer. There's a trust recession. It is our job to make sure that the consumer knows that they can trust what we're selling them. When you start doctoring it up with AI and we don't know what's real and we don't know what's fake and we start to recognize, hey, listen, like, do you think I'm going to trust you more because you're doctoring something up with AI, or do you think I'm going to trust you less? You just mentioned it. You know, the consumer spoke loud and clear on a lot of the AI Super Bowl ads, all of your major brands. Why do they spend the money that they do hiring actors and actresses and models to make sure that when they want all that done, they spend a lot of money to get it done correctly without AI. AI could do all that stuff, but they know consumers are going to very much question it. And the minute you start to put that question mark in their mind, all of a sudden they're moving on and they're moving on to somebody else's property. So you just killed yourself because you might have some really cool photos and they're awesome, right? I've seen some awesome AI photos. I'm not saying they're not good. I'm saying they're not going to work, right? And so I think you have to be very, very intentional about these photo shoots. People always ask me on these lifestyle photo shoots and why I'm so critical of them and so picky. I mean, Josh, you know how critical I am.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I look at photo shoots from professionals like in the space, and I pick them apart because what the number one thing that I say is it doesn't look natural. It doesn't look like the best photographers, they're setting the scenes, but it also looks exactly like what I'm going to walk into. There's not overly filtered. The exposure is perfect how my eye would see it, not how, you know, some AI would filter it out. I want to see it and portrayed exactly as what I'm walking into. And those are the best photo shoots. And so those of you listening to this, I know that we're kind of hanging on this topic, but I think this is going to become a hot topic for a lot of people. And I think you're going to find that certain people have paid for some of this AI photography and it's in their listings, and we need to really be thinking about maybe removing it from our listings and or doing a whole different photo shoot if there's too much of it, right? And the whole, because it was the easy button. Just like you said, the easy button is not going to produce. You're going to get a very quick result from the easy button with something like this. You might trick one or two consumers into, you know, this is the right property. The minute you start getting those bad reviews, and or even if your property, they walked into it, it was really good. What happens to the other consumers that know it's AI? I showed my wife and kids some of these pictures and I said, man, what do you think about these photos? They're awesome. Like, look at how we made this property look. Instantly, they all said, oh, that's just too AI. It looks too AI. They're like cool photos, but like they knew it was AI, which everybody does. That's the thing. You got to realize consumers are going to start to recognize this and instantly they don't trust it.
And they don't like it. I mean, you know what I mean? They don't want to have it. You know, if you're a host and you went through this, or even if you had a photographer that over edited your photos, you get one person asking you, is this AI? Right.
Yeah.
10 more are thinking it, and maybe 1,000 more are thinking it, right? And you need to go ahead and step back and say, hey, am I shooting myself in the foot here? Because you know what I mean? To your point, you may get a quick return. You may, oh, this is a really cool photo and it duped a few people. But if your response is, I duped a few people, I mean, you're already on the wrong path.
Yeah. That's a problem.
The best reviews are when the guest is like, the photos didn't do it justice. It was so much better in person. That review is a lot better than someone saying, oh, you know, they obviously used AI, or your property doesn't face west. Thanks for the sunset view over that hot tub that I'll never see. Right.
Yeah. The property was awesome, but that sunset view you saw is looking east. So I'm not sure where that sunset came from. The earth must have spun on its axle that day.
And there's a fine line, right? I'll give you an example. We had a Vodacy member. We did their property. They had a lot of power lines. They were near a transformer, right? Yeah. And my photographer, he's like, should I edit these out? I was like, no. I was like, you know, it's one thing to clear up some wires here and there, but I was like, but if you're someone who's worried about that transformer being right there, right? And it was just the way all the properties in the neighborhood were like that. It was just there in the photos. I'm like, if we remove that, it's not like the consumer got there and, oh, they must have just installed this transformer and power system, you know, just a couple of days ago. You know, they didn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's been there since day one. And that's sloppy. I mean, that's just careless. And you need to be realistic of what we're selling. And if you're saying, oh, this is going to hurt my rankings if I don't hide that, I mean, you probably should have assessed that before you bought the property, or be aware of, hey, I can't use that. Like, that's what the guest is going to see. That's what they're going to experience. You know what I mean? And we need to be truthful. And that's going to be what sets us up for the best long-term results.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome, man. Well, let's move on. We've got some good news to talk about. That sounds like, not surprising to us, but there's a couple articles talking about how much money is going into the local economies just from Airbnb. This is an Airbnb article. So they're only calculating the money going into the local economies, supporting, you know, entrepreneurs in those areas, supporting local governments, some of these smaller governments. But let's dive into this one on the amount of money being spent in the U.S. economy from Airbnb.
Yeah, I mean, we're saying this is from the Airbnb newsroom, you know, hosts and guests boost U.S. economy by a record $93 billion in 2025. So that is a large, large number there. As travel by hosts and guests generated more than $93 billion in economic activity across the U.S. in 2025, the highest level on record. Visitor spending helped support more than 1.1 million U.S. jobs, as 46% of hosts say hosting covered rising cost of living. A lot more deeper details in there, but I think the key points here that, you know, you got to kind of lay it out there is obviously we're looking at over $26 billion in total tax revenue, right, across the United States. And if you look at that article specifically, there's a pretty cool little map, and you can see by revenue, by taxable income, by jobs, what each one of those markets, Florida, for example, is massive. You know what I mean? And you can see how much revenue is bringing to that state, to that part of the economy, the taxes generating. You know, I'm all about rules and regulations. Right. I'm all about, like, you know, I'm the president of my HOA at my primary. And guess what? We don't allow short term rentals. Right. Yeah. And it's our covenants, and that's OK. Right. I'm not anti SDRs, and I'm not for everybody should be able to do it everywhere they are. Right. So I'm all about that. And this just shows that, you know, done well and as a professional host, the professional business model continues to improve. I think we'll continue to see this infrastructure increase.
Yeah. And as we talk about kind of the little bit of a shaky economy, always in the news, things that are going on with the labor markets. I mean, just Airbnb alone estimates 1.1 million labor jobs, $56 million going, or $54 billion into labor income across those 1.1 million jobs. I mean, that's a lot of work, and it's a lot of money, and it's a lot of tax revenue and infrastructure. And a lot of this is going to some smaller areas that could really use it. When you looked at that map, obviously you saw Florida was massive. California has a lot, but really it's well spread out throughout the U.S. I mean, this is money going into a lot of those backyard resort communities, a lot of those economies that could really use a lot of these jobs coming in. And so I think that a lot of local municipalities are recognizing not just the tax infrastructure, but also the job growth and the labor force being, you know, supported in a lot of these areas from this asset class. You know, I was watching, we were just watching some movies over the weekend, and we were on Hulu watching some TV and some movies, and the ads were coming up, and a lot of the ads were for short-term rentals, right? Obviously, we've seen the Airbnb ads, we've seen the Vrbo ads. You're starting to see hotels.com, and their entire hotel.com ad didn't show one hotel. All it showed was vacation rentals. Right. Expedia, same thing, vacation rentals. And so it is something that is very much, accommodation that the consumer is saying, we like this. Obviously, we always say hotels, short-term rentals, completely different markets. If I'm a business traveler, if I'm going in and out of for an event or something, a lot of times hotels work better for me. But when they're advertising now for vacation travelers, short-term rentals are very much the preferred accommodation choice there. And we're seeing how it's supporting a lot of these economies across the US. And I think it's it's something that we need to pay attention to. Those of you that are always listening, just know when we are referencing articles and stuff, Jake, you're putting those in the show notes, right? Yeah. Those will all be in the show notes along with the property. So you can go reference some of that stuff.
And another point to your hotel is, this is in this article here, is that 63% of US census tracts are home to active Airbnb listings, but no hotels, right? And there'd be certain markets, there are no hotels, right? And you see a lot of those destination markets outside the big ones, they're not a hotel market, right? Yeah. And if you're going to vacation there, you're going to be in a vacation rental or short-term rental of some sort.
Right. Yep. And so, but definitely a preferred accommodation and sometimes the only option for some of these local areas and that really supports those local economies. You really shut it down if you turn, you say, hey, we can't do short-term rentals here because it doesn't allow anybody to come in because you just don't have the hotels in there. Right. And so awesome, man. Well, listen, as people are spending a lot more money or making a lot more money and dumping it into the economy, this is more, Jake has a topic called more money, more problems. A lot of people will disagree with that. More money, more problems. I'll take those problems. American travelers are spending more than ever before on travel. Average trip costs surpassing $7,250 per trip in quarter one of 2026. However, demand for cancel for any reason, the only traveler insurance that benefits those cancellations outside of like the covered things rose. People buying travelers insurance rose by 29% in Q1 of 2026, all-time high. Airbnb's reserve now pay later is fueling a lot of the consumer being comfortable booking some of these properties, knowing that they can get a refund or cancel that if they need to. Refunding guest policies. Josh, I'm gonna come to you for some of this stuff on the refunding and understanding cancellations on how to prevent and handle them with self-managing. But people are paying more for vacations. Get them. Do we pay, as we're getting them to pay more, are they expecting and willing to pay more as long as it sounds like if there's some flexibility with what's going on? I've talked about this in the past a little bit, is a policy that we've had on our short-term rentals for quite some time now. And it's the only, I don't know anybody else that does it. Maybe more people are since I've talked about it. And definitely more people should think of it when you start to see stats like this is, we have like hotel room type cancellation policies. They can cancel within 24 hours of booking. And so they don't even need the travel insurance. They don't even need to do that. And so what we believe is it gives us a competitive advantage. And this is validating that hypothesis that gives us a massive competitive advantage because the consumer is saying, I mean, they're spending 29% more in Q1 of 2026 on cancellation insurance. But also, how are we as hosts going to, one, do what I'm doing and try to use it to my advantage and as a competitive advantage by allowing it and offering 24-hour cancellations to our guests because I want them to feel comfortable booking with us? Or two, what are we doing when like to try to say, okay, if I know the consumer is thinking about canceling, they're buying this extra insurance, how does that cover me and how does that help me as well with our stuff? And but we know from the consumer, if we offer them the ability to cancel, they can cancel, right? But as a host, cancellations, refunds, how does that affect my rankings, my host reputation on the Airbnb, on Airbnb and Vrbo? Josh, I know that you know a lot about this, so I'm going to have you pipe into that side of it.
Yeah, one, don't tell them my secret, Sean. right? That's why I win. That's why I do so well. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, I'll give you an example. So we leave our cancellation super flexible, right? In the peak season months, we have it set at 5 days, mm-hmm. right? And you're talking July 4th. I mean, you can cancel 5 days out. We are desirable enough of a property that we are not worried about that rebooking. Right. At the end of the day, if I look at back at all of 2025, because I looked at this and I started looking back to make sure last year we lost 2 days during the peak season. Right. Yeah. And if someone basically canceled last minute, we booked 5 of the 7 days back. And the 2 days we lost were like a Sunday, Monday. Right. Well, I look, but we were able to charge higher rates because the consumer is like, hey, I'm comfortable paying this. I'm comfortable booking it because if something changes down the road, I don't want to lose out on this property. But if something changes down the road, I'm not stuck. I'm not beholden to it. Right. And I know I can get booked. Now, if you have a larger property, I do think maybe you should have a longer window. You know, I mean, if you got a 7-bedroom, 10 bedroom, something like that, and you make, you know, 95% of your money is from Memorial Day to Labor Day, I'm okay having a more strict policy there in those type of markets in that situation. That should be a property by property analysis. But in general, if you give the consumer more flexibility, they're willing to give you more money. Right. And so I can charge. If I look at my May calendar right now, which I pulled up right before we got on this recording. If I look at my May calendar right now, and May is in like this recording to be released on the 29th. Right. So it'll be like 2 days. Right. My May, every Monday through Friday is booked. Every single one of my weekends, except for one of them, is wide open. Right. So initially, if you saw that, you'd be like, that's not good, Josh. That's really bad. You know what I see is in my market, which is Hilton Head. May is a slower month typically, right? So you got that right after all the spring breaks are done. It's right before summer break starts, right? You got a little bit of a dull from there. I have all of my hard days to fill are already filled. All of my easy days to fill are still open because my prices are so high and I'm going to keep them high because I guarantee every single one of those weekends is going to book, right? Yeah. And I'm going to be the only person in my comp set with a fully booked competitive calendar. Right. Yeah. Because I left it available. I pushed prices where it made sense. Right. And I leave the cancellation there. I've had July 4th for me book and cancel twice in the last 4 months. Right. I'm okay with that. It's going to book. Right. And it's going to book at the highest rates of our entire resort by a wide margin. Right. And it's not just because I said so. It's because we did all the things on the front end from, you know, designing a unique and immersive guest experience and marketing that unique and immersive guest experience to the correct target audience. Right. And so we're comfortable with that process. And it's all about crossing the T's and dotting the I's.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we say. Like it's we always say this is a game of 1,000 golden BBs, not one silver bullet. And that's just like when you mentioned and where the policy is for us is give the guest as much flexibility as possible. Make them feel as comfortable as possible. We just talked about a trust recession with our consumers out there, not trusting everything that marketers are throwing in front of them. Well, make it easy for them to cancel, make it easy for them to back out if they need to. We also know from consumer behavior and human psychology that once we make a commitment, we very much want to keep those commitments. And so whether I have to keep it or not is irrelevant because naturally human behavior wants to keep commitments. That's why marketers ask you for micro commitments along the way all the time, right? When you actually get somebody to book your property, even though in the back of their mind, they're like, yeah, I'm going to book this one because I know I can get out of it. And it gave me a competitive advantage. The minute they book it, guess how many more properties those consumers usually are looking at? They're not. They're yeah. like, hey, listen, I'm locked in. I've got this taken care of. I found the right property. And even if they do, and they don't find something that is much different or unique or better, they're sticking with us, right? And so it's very rare that something actually, you know, tragic happens or something happens that the guest is not like has to back out, then they're not coming. And so like to your point, we have like, maybe in the course of every single year, we probably lose out on one or two bookings because we have that policy, right? And it's usually on our smaller properties, we might not even miss out on it because it rebooks. On the larger properties, yeah, we do might miss out on one or two. How many do we gain? I don't know. Because we already operate at higher than average nightly rentals. We already operate at higher than average occupancies for the markets that we're in. And so I don't know exactly how that equates to more bookings for us. But based on this, what I was just reading and seeing that consumers are trying to protect themselves and they're willing to spend more money, but they're 29% of them are paying more for travelers and cancellation insurance. That's just in their pocket when they book a property like mine, because they don't have to do that. Right. I'm going to let them cancel anyways. So Josh, really quick on the before we go to the next topic, I know as a host, if I cancel on a guest, it's bad for my reputation. I understand that. What about when a guest asks for a refund? Does that hurt me at all? If they cancel because they can't, they're not coming, not ask for a refund after they stayed and I've got a bad, you know, my house wasn't cleaned or anything else. I'm saying they paid, they reserved my property because they were comfortable with the being able to back out last second. Something actually happened and they had to back out and they asked for a refund. Does that hurt me as a host? Or is that beneficial to me as a host that I allow them to do that?
You know, I would love to paint a pretty picture, but the reality of what I see, right? And so if I use a site like RankBreeze, right, or Price Labs Optimizer, and you know, and basically don't, you know, take it with a grain of salt, step back and look at the total data set in front of you. But realistically is this, I've told about this two, we've had July 4th book and canceled twice due from people over different months, right? Both times that cancellation has happened, it's been within the cancellation window. We're still months away from that. We're fine with it, right? Right after that happened, I can go and I can see that I've dropped in the rankings a little bit, right? Because Airbnb's question, I'm assuming, is like, hey, was something wrong with this property? Why this person? Yep. But guess what happens? The second we pick up another booking, the second that Airbnb makes money off of us again, or we get a review, guess what happens? Shoot right back up, right? Yeah. And so we can see inflection points. What I would look at is trends, right? If I go back and look at a 90-day window and I see that I'm slowly falling, right? And my calendar's open. If your calendar's booked, it makes sense because you have no inventory to give. But if all things are being created equal and your calendar's wide open, check those inflection points. What did the fall start happening? And Sean, you and I were talking with the Vossi member a couple months ago who basically got a bad review on one property and it affected his other properties. Yeah. Right. And he didn't catch it. And it was like, hey, hey, this is, you got a 1-star review over here for something that wasn't your, it happens, right? It just horrible situation is what it is. But your other properties got hurt because you as the host, Airbnb is like, oh, wait a minute, you know, is John Doe's property causing us issues? Let's take a step back on that. And so if we're playing in their sandbox, like you always say, we've got to play by their rules. We need to understand the rules that they're judging us by. Basically, anything positive, you get a bonus. Anything at all that loses them money, that's going to cost them money, you're having to send a refund for something, it's going to cost you rankings, right? And you can't be mad at that. I mean, we're playing in their on their platform. That's their rules. So that's, we need to understand those rules.
Yep. Love it. Love that we touched on that because there you go, the pros and cons, right? We talked about the advantages of having a policy like that. The disadvantages, if somebody does start to cancel, it can affect your rankings and it can affect, you know, them coming in. Now we feel like we get more business by offering it. You guys judge whether you want to, but based on this article, I would say the consumer very much appreciates it as well. And the consumer is willing to spend more money, right? And so that's the other key thing that article is that the money being spent on average vacations and what they're spending in these markets just continues to go up.
I mean, if you have a desirable property and your property is more desirable than all the others, you will get the bookings. Yeah. Right. And as long as you're priced reasonably for what you're trying to offer. Right. And we're not competing on price. We don't want to compete. Like if Mike was able to jump in here, he'd tell us all about it. Right.
Exactly.
But we don't want to be comparable. And if we're at the top of that market, I'm not worried about losing that booking. Cause I know I'm going to book right back again. And if I look back over the course of an entire year or years of revenue, there's a reason why Vossi properties are at the top of every market we go into. Right. And it's because the methodology works and it's sound. And so we're not looking at the nuances of I lost a Monday, I lost a Sunday, I mean, I lost this weekend. I'm looking at the course of over years of where I've been able to win time and time and time again. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're going to see where, you know, we're winning the most of battles and definitely the war. Right. Yeah, and absolutely. That's where we make the money at.
Yep, absolutely. Well said. Yeah. Win as many battles as possible, but sometimes you're going to lose a battle here and there, but you got to win the war. Right. And speaking of wars, leading into our next topic with Mr. Powell and his final meeting as head chair or Fed chair is going to be in May, right? In a couple of weeks here. And kind of, you know, most of us believe that we're kind of going to flatline and he's going to say there's no interest rate cuts in the near future. Inflation is going up. It's higher than they were anticipating, not by a ton, by a little bit. But it's, CPI is supposed to be at 3.5 right now. Core CPI, if you remove energy and food from that, is like at 2.5. Target of 2 is so much higher, which when inflation's high and, you know, you got the softening job market and some of those things that are adding to that inflationary time that we're in right now, that's not the time you cut rates. That's the time that rates raise and go up, right? I do think personally that they are going to, because energy is a big factor to that, with the war going on with Iran and oil prices, that that's skyrocketing energy prices in that number. And so we've seen that portion of the measurement, you know, really a lot higher than where it was a month and a half, 2 months ago, right? And so also food. Food is affected by that because of the transportation costs and the gas prices in the trucks that have to bring it to us. And so those two things are pretty, you know, pretty big numbers of pushing that CPI higher and higher than we want to see. And, you know, as far as Jerome Powell and what he's going to probably indicate is that they're going to probably keep rates where they're at. They might hint at a rate increase. I doubt Powell is going to do that on his way out the door, because you're going to have somebody a lot more bullish than, you know, or dovish, I guess they call it when it's talking about this, versus hawkish. And Jerome Powell has been a little bit hawkish with rates, rate cuts, all that stuff. Saying, I don't think we're there. I think Jerome Powell has been late to a lot of stuff, but I think actually overall he's done a really good job as Fed chair. I actually don't think that he's done a horrible job, contrary to, you know, a lot of people have different opinions across the board. I think he's done a pretty, like, if I had to grade Jerome Powell and his, what he's done, and I'm just looking at it from overall real estate is what my lens of this is, I would say he's a little bit late, which is why I'd give him a little bit of a lower grade, but I would say a B plus. I don't think he's done a horrible job, despite what Trump is, you know, calling him the last couple months. But he, you know, I know that we'd like to see rates come down, as an entrepreneur lending, you know, and just business lending, real estate lending, all of that helps the economy. But we got to get inflation under control as well. And it's something we have to watch. And so I think that you're, you know, if you're just sitting, one of those, you know, people with part of that $7.8 trillion sitting in money market funds waiting for rates to come down, you might still be waiting a little bit longer, right? And I think that that's what this is saying, and what we would anticipate on his way out the door and the new chair coming in, you know, and is, it's probably going to be modest decreases, if that, and it might not, it's probably already baked into a lot of the mortgages that we're seeing out there anyways. And so you might not get that big rate cut that you're waiting for, that you've been sitting on the sideline now for a year and a half waiting for, or longer, some of you, and missing out on really good deals that could be making you money. And so my advice is, you know, interest rates, whether they're at 3% or whether they're at 8%, when you underwrite your deals, the deal has to support the debt service. What doesn't matter where it's at, right? So at the end of the day, quit focusing on the rate and start focusing on the deals. And now, do higher rates affect the cash flow and the investability of a deal? Absolutely. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's a number on your underwriting sheet and on your analysis sheet to say, does this work and can this property and this market support that debt service? And I think more and more needs to be talked about that than focusing on exactly where the rates are at any given time. It doesn't really matter, right? Lock it in. If the property can support it, great. And if you can get better in the future, refinance it. If the property can't support it, don't bank on it coming down. Like, you have to say no to it, right? Anything to add to that, Josh, as far as your opinions on the rates and where they're at?
Yeah. I mean, we're always taught, you know, marry the property, date the rate. Right. You know, if you're getting into a DSCR type product, it's got a 5-year step down, a 3-year step down. You're penciling that in. You're saying, I'm riding this horse for the next 3 years, the next 5 years. I'm aware of that. And my underwriting covers, you know, what I'm doing here. And then when I refi, because, I mean, you have to understand is, like, with the rate stuff, the number of people that I've talked to outside of us, you know, and they're like, oh, we're going to buy when the rates come down. I'm like, but that was a year ago, 2 years ago. And you could have had a property by now that you've already got function up, operational, making money, making memories for you and your family as a lifestyle asset. And you'll be in a better position 2 years back than you would today. And you know, when's the best time to buy real estate was yesterday. Right. And obviously, if the numbers don't pencil out, don't buy that property. And I mean, I would say, you know, we bought our first property, ironically, as a seller finance because at the time DSCR rates were like 10 or 11. You know what I mean? But we knew, you know, we took a chance. We're like, we assumed they're not going to be 11% for the next 3 years and refi back out of that product when it made sense for us. Right. But in general, I saw those extreme swings in there. If you're waiting for COVID, you know, rates again, I don't think you're going to see this again in our lifetime, just my personal opinion. But yeah, I could be very wrong. That'd be great. But I mean, again, those rates drop, your prices go up. So you're going to be, you're paying that price one way or the other. The question is, do you want to start making money on it now? Or do you just want to keep waiting, hoping that it's going to get better and that you're the only person that's going to jump back in the game when they get better? No, everyone's going to jump back in the game. And now competition goes up, prices go up, you're bidding a lot more, right? When you're the only one bidding on the property, you have a lot more, you have a lot more fun.
It's way funner to buy right now. You know, I'm not having to compete. You know, I get to negotiate a little bit better. You know, it's crazy to me when we underwrite deals and we have an analysis and underwriting department that we help a lot of people. So we see thousands and thousands of deals. So understand that we see a lot of deals. And let's assume you had pre-COVID rates versus today's rates, and that's what you're waiting for. You will, like, we see people that say no to these deals that are waiting to save, you know, maybe they have a 7% rate today and they had a 4% rate back then, and it was going to save them a whopping $600 or $700 a month, a big amount on a monthly payment. You know, at the end of the day, they're saving $7,000 or $8,000. And they're saying, no, I'm going to wait for that rate to come back. Probably is never going to come back. I agree with you. We're not going to see those rates come back. And so the realistic is they're waiting for a rate to come into the 5 range or so that's going to save them $200 a month. And so they say no to property because they want to save $2,400 a year on their payment versus a property that might, because of that, it's still, let's say this, like we look at properties all the time, they're positive cash flow. Let's say it's only making you $1,000 a month. It makes you $12,000 a year. And so I'm a net positive $12,000 a year, even if I have to use some of that $2,400. If I refinance, I could make me an extra $15,000 a year instead of 12. But I wait for 3 years. So I give up on the cash flow for 3 years. I give up the appreciation for 3 years. I give up the note pay down for 3 years. And right now, for many of you listening that are sitting on the sidelines, you're giving up a massive tax advantage that's going to save you a significant amount of money in your pocket, many times up to about 10% of the deal. And so if you're putting 10% down, it's basically covering your whole down payment on a cash flowing property. And you're sitting there waiting on the sidelines because you want to save $300 a month when the rate comes down. And you know, I think that it's a massive mistake that a lot of people are making. And, you know, not that, you know, it is what it is. It's the name of the game and it's the name of real estate investing. I'm not going to convince anybody on this podcast because I haven't convinced them yet. Because that number, like, you know, I think a year ago was $7.2 trillion sitting on the sideline. Now it's at 7.8. And so, I'm making the case for people sitting money in the sideline. Maybe I'm a really bad sales guy on this, but at the end of the day, those of you that are in the game, understand that's what you're doing. You're focusing on a small part of a deal. The deal has to cover that debt service. The deal has to cover those higher rates. But if it can, don't give up on quality assets and quality areas that produce money and put money in your pocket every single year and save you massively on taxes. Let somebody else pay for these nice properties for you, along with some positive cash flow, because you're worried about an extra point or two on the interest rate, especially if the property can handle it and the market can handle it. So, okay, guys, we are going to, Jake just popped up. Projected to exceed $8 trillion in money market funds by the end of 2026. Wow. That just keeps going up. So crazy. All that is all that I look at that and say, what is the consumer sentiment out there? That means investor sentiment and consumers are wanting to sit on the sidelines. They're waiting. They're sitting there in wait and see mode. That's a massive amount of money in wait and see mode. Eventually it gets dumped into markets, and real estate is one of the markets it will get dumped into. And those of us that own assets, when that money comes in, we're going to be really happy we got in what we did and that we own these assets when that money starts dumping in. So we're going to wrap it up for today. We have one more topic we're not going to get to. We're going to wrap up today. And And, you know, send our prayers toward Mike and the family. And so that they're back in action and everybody's back healthy. Josh, it's been awesome, man. We'll do it again next week. Sir. Those of you listening, you know, we appreciate your time spending it with us. We always ask you those favors at the end. Like it, share it, review the show wherever you're at so the algorithm can help us find other people. You don't run a bunch of ads and sponsorships, so the only way it grows is if you guys share it. And I think that Jake told me we have 56% of you that listen regularly, not like one-time listeners, regular listeners that don't subscribe. Guys, follow us, subscribe us. Those things help us on whatever platform you're on. And so just hit that subscribe or follow button. And that is very appreciated for the algorithm. The final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, Josh.
Cheers, brother.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.